So we're live now. We're going to be talking about Essay 1 from S. Roan, and I've already assigned this to you, Mostly Peaceful. And we have our special guest as we speak. So we'll spend probably 15 minutes on this. Hopefully you're able to read it. If not, make sure you read it. Read it and ask any questions that you have. Curtis, I can't see you because you're on your phone. So we tried this already before. Let's see here. There we go.
Okay,
we're live.
There we go. How's that?
So we're on.
I figured it was appropriate for me to wear my hat today since I'm in Texas.
Yeah.
Hope that doesn't offend anyone.
Well, you want to take us through this, Mostly Peaceful?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the first part, and then I'll take the second part. And we'll answer any questions that people have.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, Mostly Peaceful. We've heard that a lot this year, this last year. This is really interesting. When you introduced me to these essays, and I read through them, and I ate them up. They were great. They are great. This first essay, he really kind of lays the landscape that we're in. A lot of us are familiar with it, and a lot of us, if we're not familiar with it, we know something's up, and things don't pass the sniff test, you know. And he kind of gives some prescient examples with using two books, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World and Orwell's 1984. And he kind of talks about how we've been set up, we've kind of been in this way of living of comfort. You know, I mean, we're probably one of the greatest economies in the world. We're one of the most powerful country. And we're definitely a global leader. And so we take a lot for granted, you know, we just kind of go about our ways and work, and then work hard, play hard, you know. And I think that that's kind of set us up to pursue comfort, to pursue a skewed vision of what the good life is. And he kind of lays that out, what that looks like.
The point of the Brave New World reference was that comfort is used to control people.
Yes.
And he mentioned Obama's tenure especially, not so much Trump, but Obama, that there seemed to have been a transition from Obama to Trump, from Brave New World type of dystopian to the 1984
right
dystopian, where the force is required now for controlling the masses. They're not going to rely on just comfort, provision of comfort,
right? And you know,
for the transformation of America, That's the key for the socialist transformation of America.
Right. He points out in this essay on the 30th of October 2008, he says, Obama, he being Obama, says, quote, "We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America."
Key part right there. That's
Yeah.
key.
And I remember that speech, and I remember literally thinking, like, what do you transform? What needs to be transformed? What is it that's fundamentally wrong with the United States of America that it needs such transformation? Unless you want the United States of America to cease to exist, become something
Well,
different,
the
other.
problem with America, according to that way of thinking, the leftist way of thinking, is that it's not socialist.
Right.
That's the problem. That's what fundamentally needs to be transformed.
Yeah. And he goes through here and he talks about, Merriam-Webster's definition of fundamental, serving as a basis of supporting existence or determining essential structure or function, things that are fundamental, like our Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights. Yeah. So that's what he was seeking to change.
This is an interesting sentence here. Comparatively, the two dystopian novels mentioned above depict consolidated power, but illustrate different means of ensuring the not longevity of that power. So, what got our attention is that there was kind of an awakening from the Soma stuff. I mean, if you want to push that. Donald Trump descended the golden escalator and formally announced his candidacy. From that moment on, the left's promise of the realization of Bernie's revolution became under threat.
Yes.
4 years of fruitless resistance to the Trump presidency and to the seemingly clear pre-virus path to his re-election caused the amalgamation of forces behind the comfort and happiness approach to recalibrate.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to mark that sentence because that's a key sentence right there
Well, and
to recalibrate.
I want to point out the sentence where the conformity necessary for the system's sustainment is effectively aided by the widespread administration of a drug called Soma. Well, people might even in reading the book, might, oh, that's interesting. It's a drug. Well, I don't do drugs. They just kind of make a too close of a comparison. But I think Soma in our culture are anything that we pursue for comfort on any level, in any context. I mean, it can be, for some people, it's just vegging out on Friday night watching movies, because that's what they want to do. Just detaching, just disengaging, from the fight, if you will, that is our lives, to make our income and provide for our families. And we're always looking for ways to unhitch. It could be sports and entertainment. It could be, for some people, unfortunately, it could be pornography. It could be, taking in all the tantalizing images that go on in our culture. And so Soma isn't just a thing. It's ideas, I think, the way we ex are some of the ways we experience it.
But he doesn't think that the Brave New World thing is really the way forward for these folks.
No.
He's thinking it's more going to be more like 1984. Let's talk about doublespeak. What's doublespeak?
Well,
What's that have to do with what we're seeing?
yeah, I
The mostly peaceful protests.
Okay.
It's a contradiction of what you're seeing, right? They're just denying.
Yeah, it's
Their
really.
reality is one thing, and then it's described a totally different way, and you're just forced to talk that way, or there's some kind of consequence for you.
Yeah, it's a use of language, like postmodernist perspective of recreating reality. And And not just in a novel, in a story, but in reality, what we experience, you know. I remember reading an article online about what was happening with the way the media was talking about the riots and protests and everything that went on. And they apparently the real riotous stuff didn't really happen until sundown, right? And then it would knock off until about, you know, maybe 2 or 3 in the morning, because everybody's, you know, people start getting tired and or whatever. And then they'd go to bed, get some sleep, and then they would just protest during the day hours. And so they used this timeline to justify suggesting that this was mostly peaceful, because in the 24-hour cycle, you've got, you know, 18 hours of peacefulness, sleeping or just, you know, getting people riled up, and you've got, you know, the other 8 hours is rioting. So therefore it's mostly peaceful. You know, that's doublespeak. You know, these were riots going on over the summer. These weren't mostly peaceful. These were sleep, get riled up, riot, and repeat, you know.
Well, and I don't know if you were able to see the discussion that I had with Adam on whataboutism, but Adam made a really good point about definitions. A protest is always peaceful by definition. A riot is always not peaceful by definition. So it's to say it's mostly peaceful protests is kind of like, well, but if it's really a protest, then it'd be 100% peaceful.
You know, later on in the in this
Otherwise, it's a riot, and that's kind of that would be worth covering as a riot.
yeah the oh you know what I just realized that
Or insurrection, because how many police cars were bombed and how many government buildings were, attacked? That's insurrection, according to the dictionary.
right well and
But
later in the
I never heard it called insurrection.
later in the article I think I read this one online. It because I'm now that I have it printed in front of me, I went over to the page and I see the thing that I just explained to you about the timeline. It's from this article. So it was actually this article I was reading online when I first came across that piece of information. And in there, he makes a sports analogy in this paper of the mostly peaceful thing. So he says, to make a sports analogy, if a football team is behind by 3 points from the opening minutes until the final seconds, and then scores a touchdown and wins the game by 4 points, would the average person describe the winner as having experienced a mostly losing game, or a victory? You know, and we don't talk like that. So yeah, I think it's clear what was happening.
Aided by the tragic death of Mr. Floyd and the Rahm Emanuel immortalized call to never let a crisis go to waste, a perfect storm formed in June of 2020, and that recalibration included blowing the dust off Orwell's masterpiece and giving us all a taste of both brute force and the threat of political support of such exercises should the left win back the keys to the governing castle. In 1984, the demonstration of degree as a means to an end is when O'Brien holds up four fingers and asks Winston, "How many fingers am I holding up?" And Winston replies, "Four." And if the party says it's not four, but five, then how many? Asks O'Brien, and after multiple inflictions of increasing pain, Winston begins his surrender to the party line. After the trip to 101, the degree has its desired effect. And during the days and nights following Mr. Floyd's death, this is where he's sinking. June is where we're crossing into Orwell. From Brave New World. During the days and nights following Mr. Floyd's death, most of us watched in horror as one city after another fell to the force of mob rule and the violent destruction it wrought. We all saw that. How many guns were bought? record numbers of guns
Yeah,
were
there's
bought, and
there.
I predicted they would come after those guns at the first very first thing, because what are you gonna do?
There
You
were
can't
over
let that
six
happen.
million. There were over 6 million new gun owners last year.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not up to speed politically
That's true.
on their rights. But okay. As sane humans, we trusted our senses and thought process and drew the conclusions such a competency produces. Still, one media outlet after another told us what we were wishing, what we were seeing on our screens were mostly peaceful protests.
Yes.
And he's saying this is like doublespeak. Now, what the left is attempting with the aid of their propaganda arm in the mainstream media is to tell millions of citizens that the reality before them is not, in fact, reality. It is what they say it is. Skeptical? Watch the long form version of the video recording the Fulton County, Georgia vote counting as it was presented by an attorney for the Trump administration. Now, read some of the left's explanation of what your eyes are seeing on the screen. How many fingers am I holding up, Winston? But these are merely test runs. What is being threatened by the left and their surrogates is the missing element, force.
Yes.
That's the key part where he's going with this, is he says on the next page, he says that what we know from history is that every socialist movement and on the left has needed force to it to counter resistance. He's about to give five actions that would begin a prolonged period of one party rule, which is what the goal is for them. How long such a governing paradigm produces a 1984 style Ministry of Love from that story, if you know the story, will depend on the level of resistance. Key part of it. The history of socialist regimes, this is the second to the last paragraph, the last second to the last sentence. The history of socialist regimes instructs us that the only way such a societal arrangement can sustain itself, that's a one-party rule, is by opposing such resistance with force. That opposition will require the use of force. And so we return to the degree of that force. So we're, what are those five things? Let's maybe talk about that.
Oh yeah, the five foreseeable events that need to happen to set the
For one
conditions.
party or for one party rule.
Yeah, first, bare majorities in the House and Senate. Second, waiver of the filibuster rule, which
In
can
the
be done
Senate.
with a simple majority.
In the
Third,
Senate.
in the Senate.
Yep.
In the Senate. Third, the passage of a statute granting full citizenship to all illegal aliens. And then fourth, granting a statehood, of statehood to Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. And lastly, expanding the seats on the Supreme Court to a number sufficient to overcome the recent conservative gains and filling those additional seats with leftist ideologies. And as he's.
Ideologues,
Oh,
ideologues.
ideologues. Sorry. Thanks.
No
And
problem.
he says, he wraps it up in saying all five of these things are being
Yeah.
openly discussed, unapologetically discussed, to some degree by the members of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. You don't hear that from Republicans because Republicans are not interested in one party rule. We
Correct.
never have been. We had one party rule at one point in our history. That was right after the Civil War and during. But we never wanted it. We didn't want to keep it. We gave it up.
I mean, it wasn't that much longer after that that there was a Democratic, serious contender, Democratic president. Just in case you're just joining us, Republicans controlled the White House during the Civil War and immediately. If it hadn't been for the assassination of President Lincoln, it would have been total control of the government. But Lincoln had a Democratic vice president that took over when he was shot. So that set things back quite a bit. That's when the KKK formed, for example. So, but we have not been interested in total control
Right.
of the country. That the socialist Democrats are interested in total control, which is not that shocking because socialists need total control for their program to work. So, now the rest of this is going to develop this point and develop what this is going to look like and what we can do, what kind of resistance we can offer this,
Right.
because it's not too late. I would say the first resistance is you need to oppose all five of those things that he just mentioned. The first thing you need to oppose is bare majorities in the House and the Senate. And that's a conjunction. So to oppose that, you only need to win on one of those. You have to win either the House or the Senate. Preferably you need to win the Senate, I think. Preferably if you could choose, although the House is the easier one to take. Secondly,
Which is why the
oppose the
Democrats
filibuster
started
rule.
there. Sorry.
Yeah. Of course, you can only oppose the waiver if you're in the Senate of the filibuster. You can only oppose waiving the filibuster if you're in the Senate. Applying popular opposition against any full citizenship of illegal aliens, opposing statehood of DC and Puerto Rico, and opposing packing the Supreme Court. But the best way to do that is if you have people who are elected. So that means you have to be on the ground and be hyper vigilant about voter fraud because they're using the response to the virus to sneak in all sorts of stuff, like mass mail-in ballots
Yes.
without signature verification. Social distancing makes it virtually impossible to meaningfully observe. There's all sorts of things that they get away with. There's not a lot of supervision with vote counting from non-Democrats.
And it,
There's not a lot. There's
you
not a
know,
lot.
my experience having worked on a campaign, in the past is even without all this stuff, I worked on the Dauscher campaign and I think that was 04.
Watch your language.
Sorry. And
I thought you said Doucher. Sorry. My apologies.
we
I'm getting
experienced
old.
that election went to a recount, and we experienced a lot of resistance. It was in, you know, Democrat. It was from the Democrat side. It was an incumbent Democrat, Carrera, Lou Carrera, Lou Correa, Lou Correa. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he mentions a book here by legal scholar Randy Barnett called Our Republican Constitution, Securing the Liberty and Sovereignty of We the People. I have not read that book, but I guess I'll probably take a look at it at some point.
Yeah.
Our Constitution commands the building of such a structure. That is, the best regime is a republican form of government that allows people to live in close proximity to each other while pursuing happiness while respecting other people's rights. to be represented in the government, the people controlling the government. Not the government controlling the people only, but the people controlling the government. So that's a government of the people, by the people. So why do you think we would, why would we, what would be a good reason to oppose DC statehood? What do you think?
The Constitution. The Constitution.
Tell me more about that.
The Constitution explicitly has a place for the capital, for the nation to be on neutral ground, not a state.
Do you know where the capital was in 1787?
Wasn't it up in New York?
I mean, George Washington, Washington, D.C. is named after George Washington, but it wasn't called that until he died.
Oh, so was it in Virginia?
George Washington was still alive. It was New York.
New York, okay, it was New York.
It was in New York. Of course, the Constitutional Convention took place in Philadelphia. But the D.C. did not exist when the Constitution was written. George Washington was there. He was the president of that body that wrote the Constitution.
Yeah, so, I didn't mean to imply that Washington D.C. was explicitly named in there, but the wherever our capital mm-hmm. is. No.
Well, there's a capital city, right? What the Democrats are proposing is that there should be a capital state as well.
Yeah.
Which, what in the world would they want with that for? First of all, they get two senators. So they want that.
That's what they want.
Secondly, they get two extra votes in the Electoral College. So they want that.
Right.
Because each senator is an electoral vote. But it's more than that. It's this. It's a consolidation. And we're getting into a little bit into the second essay called The Consolidation of Power, but DC is already hyper consolidated power there. And the suggestion that those people don't have representation in the government is a little odd, because they're the only city that is directly represented by the federal government.
Well, and that's where,
of course, it's all Democrat.
That's
too,
where everyone who so. Populates the administrative state is centralized, so it's already
yeah,
centralized.
I know. And I don't know if you remember, but Trump had made a suggestion that he wanted to decentralize some of these agencies.
Yes.
He wanted to take, for example, the Department of Agriculture, and I think put it in Nebraska or something like that. Take the Department of Interior and, I don't know, put it into South Dakota or something. In other words, break up some of the federal government. The government has millions of people working for it, the federal government, and get them out of D.C. and get them out into real America.
Right.
And that's very frightening for these people, because there's a swamp there, and they want to protect it now with a state, its own state, which would be layers of bureaucracy. You'd have city, state, and federal now in D.C., surrounding D.C. Of course, they mainly want it for the votes. They mainly want it for the Senate votes, because yeah. the Senate votes to confirm the judiciary.
Yeah,
people
need to realize that the Constitution, you've said this before, Lucas, that the Constitution was made for times like these. It's made
yes.
to address these types of problems. And people need to realize that these are problems.
But only if people defend it. The Constitution
right.
doesn't defend itself.
That's right.
The Constitution gives us the tools that we need to fend off these kind of attempts at consolidation of power. There's all sorts of checks in there and tools that people, opportunities. that's where we're going to get to for the rest of these essays, in essay four specifically.
Yeah.
Or actually essay three, which you're going to take. Essay two will go through with Adam. And essay three, I guess, will come back with you. And we'll see who does essay five.
You know, I would like.
But this is a real threat. I mean, we're talking about one party rule for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Of the kind that was in the South, for example, after the Civil War, when there's consolidation of political power, the Democrats retook over for 90 or 100 years in the South. And some of the worst civil rights violations in our nation's history were there.
Yeah.
And the reason that that was allowed to happen was because there was one party rule. There was no accountability. And we see that in California too, with one party rule. There's no accountability.
So it just spirals down. Yeah.
The same thing is threatened to happen in the in America, except for instead of San Francisco or Sacramento controlling the whole state, it would be D.C. And if they want, if they get their way, a state and a city controlling the entire country.
Yeah.
And if they get the state, it helps them get control of the entire country. Because what they want is they want the people in D.C. to control people in Oklahoma.
Right.
The people in Oklahoma want to be left alone. Right? That's mainly what they want.
Yeah.
You know, let me have my business. Let me be able to defend myself, be able to go to church, you know, have freedom of, have my freedoms, live in peace
happiness
and prosperity.
Yeah.
But DC doesn't want that. DC is threatened by that. They're threatened by that. So they're only not threatened if they can control flyover country.
Right.
In the same way that Sacramento is threatened by freedom in Bakersfield.
Yeah. You know, I think it's worth
We have to resist every single part. We have to resist.
I think it's worth pointing out to people this this book by Barnett. I got about halfway through it only, and I cheated at that. I did it on audiobook, but I was just trying to take in as much of what he gave in this essay as possible. But what he gets into in that book is he really talks about first principles and the difference between rights and laws and natural rights and natural laws, and he's really laying out. Something we've talked about in the past, about the whole, the presumption of freedom, really is part of what you begin with, when you're, what our founders began with when they wrote the Constitution. Freedom was a given, individual freedom was a given. And the government is really intended to represent the people. The people are the ones that give the government its power. When the government has these millions of jobs, we're paying for those. Taxpayers are paying for those. Businesses are paying for those. You know, you've mentioned before about the pandemic. Like, hello, you're shutting down all the income generators. Why are you doing that? You know, where do you think you get the money from? Government doesn't print
tax money.
It collects it. So we need to be really taken seriously how the government is spending our money. It's our money that's being spent. And I think that's another piece of this to get people to pay attention to. Anyway.
Yeah. I think that we cannot emphasize enough the threat of one party rule.
Right.
You can't emphasize it enough.
I think you're right. He ends this essay with this great sentence. He says, to repair the damage, we must look to the Constitution's text and structure for mechanisms not yet utilized to help in the construction of an off-ramp. That was very tantalizing. That really pulled me into the next essay. Oh, what's the next thing that he's going to talk about? Things not yet utilized. There's stuff in the Constitution that we haven't even used yet. Like, that's crazy. They want to consolidate it and keep it in there or get away from it. Yeah.
Well, my experience on the campuses is the same as with one party rule. It's the same thing.
Right.
And they abuse that power because there's no effective check on them.
Absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah. I think a lot of the Democrats are happy with that because they're in the Soma land. They're in Brave New World where they're just, who knows what they're doing. They're, I don't know, like you mentioned, pornography, or they seem to really like drugs. They are distracted from building things that are valuable to America.
They like being generous with tax dollars to immigrant, to illegal immigrants, you know, all kinds of
stuff. That's not generosity.
It's not.
the government is never generous. The government is never generous.
That's right.
The government is not compassionate. The government cannot be those things.
That's right.
Only people, humans can. So, yeah, they use the word generous, but that's doublespeak.
There's the doublespeak, yep.
Yeah, compassionate. When Obama says, we're going to ask you to pay more taxes, that's doublespeak. You're not asking me to do anything. You're telling me under threat of force.
Right.
With people with guns. So if he just said it that way, that it would sound... that a lot of these Democrats that are a little bit more sensible, they would break out of their Soma and they'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But
he's telling the truth.
Yeah. Well, they're asking you in the same way that mafia is asking you.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But can you imagine Obama just says, yeah, we're not going to really ask you. We're going to make you with guns pay more. And he would be saying it more truthfully. But it probably would be less popular. So the way we talk is really important. We have to, I think, develop a boldness to speak truth.
Yes.
To learn the truth and to speak it, and to speak it freely, and to not feel encumbered by arbitrary, artificial, fake, doublespeak rules, to feel included or whatever. But to just have integrity. And people might interpret you wrong. They might interpret you to be mean-spirited, but all you have to do is point out that you don't have any mean-spiritedness about it at all. Elizabeth Martindale is asking, when Republicans had control of the House, how did they use it? It's not clear exactly when you're talking about, Elizabeth. The first time Republicans had control of the House, they passed a bill called the Civil Rights Act of 1866, and that became the 14th Amendment. They abolished slavery, they passed the 14th Amendment, and they gave they passed the 15th Amendment, which was the right to vote. Race was a protected category. So black men specifically had the right to vote. So that's how Republicans used the control of the House. The only time that they had total control of the government. I don't know if that answers your question, but they were called radical Republicans. Just Google radical Republicans and you'll see. I think they still have that in Google. If it doesn't show up on Google, go to DuckDuckGo. How do you get to DuckDuckGo? Go to DuckDuckGo, search DuckDuckGo. It's the third one. You'll get that later. Go to Bing, search Google. It's the third one down. Depending on what. But Elizabeth, how many times have the Democrats had control of the House? And what did they do with it? You got to look at everything.
Yeah.
I don't know where she was going with that question, but all right.
All right.
Any other questions we have? Okay. I don't see any other questions. Not sure if people didn't do the reading or it's like being in class. Nobody did the reading. No, but maybe you did the reading and you just didn't understand it or something. But we're going to be doing essay number two next, consolidating power. Don't miss it. Got anything else to add?
No, the next essay is really where a lot of the meat is, of understanding. And yeah, don't miss it. That's a good one. People, you're going to want a lot of good information there. You're not going to want to miss.
And if you missed the if you missed the one that we did with Adam on whataboutism, you want to catch that. And there's going to be one, looks like we got another comment. There's going to be another one on the reading that I assigned today on Wren versus DC.
Oh, cool.
So we'll have to take that because the lady from my home state of Colorado just got her concealed carry license in DC. And all these Democrats are freaking out. It's like, don't you know the law? Wren versus DC, 2017. Judge Griffith's majority opinion. Read it. So read that. Make sure you read that because I want you to be in the top of your game.
And we should
Amy said she did. Amy's saying she did the reading. So let's give Amy a high five.
High five, Amy.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah. Yeah, she said it made me want to read the next one. I agree. These are very excellent. Essays.
And we'll put a link to this essay in the comments below.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you're tagged in this video, so hopefully you are, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Sounds good. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, too.
Bye.
Oh, let's have a benediction. Oh. You want to do a prayer?
Oh, sure. Sure, I can pray. Father God, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to be able to take time to digest this information and be able to get it out there to people. God, I just ask that whoever has been on with us and whoever will see this in the future will be blessed by it, and you'll use it. You'll use our conversation here beyond our own abilities to be able to open people's eyes to truth and the reality in which we live. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
And may the God of peace fill you with all joy. Sorry, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing.
Amen.
Romans 15:13. Okay, see ya.
All right, see ya.